ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the Prime Minister bows to pressure and calls a Commonwealth Royal Commission in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. Also, as bushfires burn in several states, firefighters are preparing for catastrophic conditions in Victoria tomorrow. And we'll hear from Americans fleeing Trump's United States for Australia.
I'm an American living in Australia.
And good morning. I'm an American in Australia.
We're Americans who have just moved to Australia, and I can't believe this is my life.
The love that I get from total random people, it gives me that much more love for Australia.
After weeks of pressure from the Jewish community, the opposition and many other Australians, the Prime Minister has this afternoon called a Commonwealth Royal Commission into anti-Semitism and social cohesion in the wake of last month's Bondi terror attack. It'll be led by the former High Court Judge, Virginia Bell. Anthony Albanese had previously maintained a quicker federal inquiry was more appropriate, while New South Wales would hold its own Royal Commission. That will no longer go ahead. Here is Mr. Albanese making the announcement in Canberra this afternoon.
Today I announce that I will be recommending to the Governor-General in an Executive Council meeting that will be held tomorrow that a Royal Commission on anti-Semitism and social cohesion be established. This was endorsed by a meeting of the Federal Cabinet today. I have asked that former High Court Justice, the Honourable Virginia Bell, AC, to serve as the Commissioner. As agreed with Commissioner Bell, Dennis Richardson's work will become part of the Commission and he will support its work with delivery of an interim report by the Commission in April.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. And joining us now with more on this is Claire Armstrong, the ABC's Chief Digital Political Correspondent. Claire, what other detail has the Prime Minister given about this Royal Commission?
Well, we know that the Prime Minister has rolled what was previously going to be a short, sharp review into security agencies identifying any potential gaps or issues in terms of the response to the Bondi attack. That was going to be led by spy boss Dennis Richardson, former spy boss, I should add. That's going to be wrapped now into the Royal Commission as part of one of four broad terms of reference. We've got, firstly, that this Royal Commission led by former High Court Judge Virginia Bell will look at anti-Semitism, its drivers and other factors in Australia. It will look at how making recommendations on how law enforcement and others can be assisted in tackling anti-Semitism. The third point is on the circumstances around the Bondi attack. That's where the Dennis Richardson review will now sort of sit. That will be part of an interim report from the Royal Commission that will hand back in April. And then the fourth point is any other recommendations that can strengthen social cohesion, particularly looking at tackling ideological and religiously motivated extremism. So those four broad issues, the final report the Prime Minister has said he wants to have before the 1 year anniversary of the Bondi attack in December this year, 2026. That's the broad kind of information that we now have. More details around the extent of public hearings and other factors are yet to be decided, but a major announcement from the Prime Minister with those terms of reference and, of course, appointing Ms. Bell.
And Claire, did Mr. Albanese say why he'd changed his mind on a national royal commission?
The Prime Minister sort of resisted characterising this as a change of mind rather the end of a longer listening process. He talked about how it's only been 25 days since the Bondi attack and that he has spent that time talking to members of the Australian Jewish community, legal experts and others, hearing, as we sort of know from reporting, lobbying from his own party, both current and former members of the Labor Party, and a whole range of people in civil society expressing their opinions. And he's essentially said that he's taken the time to listen and get this right, which sort of flies in the face of some of the comments he and other cabinet ministers had been making in the last couple of weeks, particularly in regards to saying that a royal commission was not the most appropriate or effective way to respond to Bondi. He's talked about fears that, for example, anti-Semitic and other extremist views might be platformed, or that the royal commission might be traumatizing for certain communities. He's sort of shifted his view on that without actually acknowledging what a significant change of mind this actually is.
And Claire, given the delay in calling the National Inquiry, do you think it's going to be damaging for Mr. Albanese politically?
I think in the short term we will see the opposition, and we already have seen opposition leader Susan Lee put out a statement saying that this was the Royal Commission that the Prime Minister didn't want to have. He was dragged kicking and screaming to it effectively by the kind of building public pressure. That obviously looks the case now, but once we get the actual hearings underway and there's evidence and recommendations to act on, I think that this will shift. There's still danger for the Labor government politically, and this now becoming quite a dominant component of the remainder of the 2.5 years or so of the Albanese government term that's left. But in terms of the flip-flop itself being longer-term damaging, I think the Prime Minister will get past this.
Claire, thank you very much. Claire Armstrong is the ABC's chief digital political correspondent. As the fierce heatwave continues across much of southern Australia, hundreds of homes have been evacuated in central Victoria and the state's northeast as bushfires spread. There are unconfirmed reports houses have been lost in the small town of Ruffey, about 170 kilometres north of Melbourne. Fires have been burning in South Australia too, where temperatures in the mid-40s have been recorded today. A cool change is expected to improve conditions in that state tomorrow, but authorities are warning the fire danger in Victoria will be the worst it's been in years. Kathleen O'Connor prepared this report.
Sean, you on 13?
I am. Can you not hear me?
Surrounded by black smoke and flames, firefighters on the front line try to navigate their way through the difficult terrain as a bushfire takes hold of an area near Longwood in central Victoria, burning more than 10,000 hectares.
There's two of us coming out, two hot in there at the moment.
It's hot there at the moment.
We're on 256. Is that you, Sean?
Yeah, that track that you turned down, that was the track to get in.
Roger, we'll come on in.
From the air, fire crews are trying their best to help, dumping water where they can and monitoring its spread. Jason Heffernan is Chief Fire Officer of Victoria's Country Fire Authority.
The Longwood Fire is currently at an emergency warning level with advice being provided to a number of communities along that fire there. It's between Euroa and Avenel on the Hume Highway in the northern part of our state. Currently 100 fire appliances and over 400 firefighting personnel are on the ground battling that blaze at the moment.
Authorities say two structures were destroyed in the blaze, but it's too early to tell whether they're homes or sheds. Tim Weebush is Victoria's Emergency Management Commissioner.
They're in deep bushland. It's a very difficult terrain to get into. They have been observed by our aircraft, and until we get in there, we won't be able to confirm exactly what those structures are.
92 personnel from New South Wales have arrived in Victoria to help battle the out-of-control blaze. A relief centre has been set up for all those residents told to evacuate their homes. Laura Jeffrey lives in Avenel, an area told to evacuate. She's near the township, which hasn't been evacuated yet, but plans to leave tonight with her two children.
We can see huge plumes of smoke. The fire is definitely raging on the other side of the highway.
Further north, near the border of Victoria and New South Wales, the fire threat is also critical. Chris Hardman is Chief Fire Officer at Forest Fire Management Victoria.
Over the last couple of days, we've had a very active fire in the Mount Lawson-Walwa area of the Upper Murray, close to the New South Wales border.
Weather conditions across the country haven't been easy for firefighters, with a heatwave still lingering across Western Australia, South Australia, New South Wales, Canberra and Northern Tasmania. In South Australia, temperatures reached 46 degrees, causing a number of grass fires to break out in areas across Adelaide. Paul Seeger is Deputy Chief Officer of the South Australian Country Fire Service.
Over the last 24 to
48 hours, we've seen a number of fires through the state. They've all been quickly controlled.
Major highways were also closed and residents lost power. Like many other states and territories across the country, South Australia's Emergency Services Minister Rhiannon Pearce is now focusing on Friday's extreme fire danger warning.
We, of course, are not out of the woods just yet. We are going to see some extreme conditions across our state tomorrow, combined with winds that can exacerbate our dangers.
Meanwhile, up north in Townsville, Queensland, an emergency of a different kind. Wild storms are lashing parts of the far north, and residents have been urged to prepare for a possible cyclone. David Henderson is chief engineer of the Cyclone Testing Centre at James Cook University.
With the forecast winds of being that 90 kilometres per hour gust wind speeds, look, that's definitely enough to bring branches down, trees down, those things. It's not dissimilar to the wind speeds that were all through XTC Alfred down through southeast Queensland. We saw a lot of power outage through that for these very similar wind speeds.
David Henderson from James Cook University, Kathleen O'Connor reporting. The Reserve Bank's deputy governor has confirmed the news mortgage borrowers don't want to hear. Interest rates are unlikely to fall further anytime soon. But in an exclusive interview with ABC News, Andrew Houser also indicated the bank isn't in a rush to raise rates. The ABC's business editor, Michael Yander, interviewed Mr. Houser this morning. Michael, the Bureau of Statistics data out yesterday showed there'd been a fall in inflation. What did the Reserve Bank Deputy Governor make of that?
Yeah, we saw those numbers from November showing headline inflation fell from 3.8 to 3.4%, which was more than economists expected. And also the underlying measure that the Reserve Bank prefers fell from 3.3 to 3.2%. But Andrew Houser said that November data out yesterday pointed to inflation being only a tiny bit above what the Reserve Bank had previously forecast.
It ticked down. That was helpful. But it was largely as we had expected. And we, as you know, will be waiting for the quarterly inflation number in 2 or 3 weeks' time before we take a view on where we think inflation is today. But inflation above 3%, let's be clear, is too high. We're charged to keep inflation between 2 and 3%, and it's currently above that.
And Michael, some economists are now tipping there will be a rate rise at the February meeting. Did Mr. Houser give you any insight as to what would need to occur for that to happen?
Yes. So, Sam, the market pricing is currently about a 30% chance of a rate rise as soon as February, and the market is pricing in a cash rate rising from the current 3.6% to 4% by the end of this year. Andrew Houser, of course, was reluctant to buy into that market pricing and flatly rejected any invitation to say whether a one-third prospect of a rate rise was a fair assessment of the probability. But what he did do was completely reject any suggestion that the bank will raise rates if the inflation numbers out later this month for the December quarter exceed any certain threshold.
You're targeting the whole time inflation out a year to 2 years, and that informs making a judgment. Of course, it's the case that if that number in Q4 were spectacularly high or spectacularly low, we'd have to ask ourselves what was driving that, and that might be an important part of our overall judgment. But we don't have a rule that says if it's 0.9 we hold and if it's 1 we raise or 0.7 we cut. We take a view about the whole economy.
That's the Deputy Governor of the Reserve Bank, Andrew Houser. And Michael, there's a lot going on overseas. What did Mr. Houser have to say about the outlook for the year ahead, both here and overseas?
He said he likes to be an optimist and he hopes that things will turn out well. He pointed particularly to the AI boom and the prospect that not only is that generating a lot of income for many companies, including in some of Australia's key trading partners in East Asia currently as they build the chips needed for those data centres, but also raises the prospect of improved productivity performance, which could allow the economy to grow more strongly without putting pressure on inflation and therefore interest rates, meaning that the Reserve Bank potentially could stay on hold for 2026. But he did also point to the risks in the global economy, particularly the geopolitical risks, a lot of which are stemming from the United States. In particular, when I asked him about it, Andrew Houser says the current US intervention in Venezuela is a case in point of something that could go either way in terms of the economy.
And I think Venezuela is an interesting example of that continued sort of duality. clearly what's happened has created a whole bunch of new geopolitical questions that you and others in ABC, I'm sure, are better answering than I am. But it also offers the prospect, doesn't it, if Venezuela, that has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, manages to mobilize more of that output and the world economy, that oil prices might come down, and that would mean cheaper petrol at the pumps for every Australian.
That's the RBA's Deputy Governor, Andrew Houser, who I spoke to earlier today. He does say that the Reserve Bank has plenty of capacity to respond in either direction. So if there are negative risks that come to the fore, they can still cut rates considerably from the current level of 3.6% if there was a financial crisis globally or a recession in Australia. Equally, if inflation continues to stay above target and remains not under control, there is the capacity to raise rates back to where they were before they started cutting them.
The ABC's business editor, Michael Yander. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Thousands of people have taken to the streets of the US city of Minneapolis after an immigration agent shot dead a woman in her car during an enforcement operation. The Department of Homeland Security alleges the woman was rioting and had attempted to run over an immigration or ICE officer. But the mayor of Minneapolis and the Minnesota governor reject those claims. Rachel Hayter filed this report.
On the snowy streets of the US city of Minneapolis, protesters voice their outrage at the killing of a 37-year-old woman at the hands of an immigration agent.
You're going to shoot someone else?
It's fierce sentiment shared by the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey.
I have a message for ICE. To ICE, get the f*** out of Minneapolis.
2,000 federal agents were deployed to the twin cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul as part of the Trump administration's latest crackdown on immigration. But today, that law enforcement operation went fatally wrong.
They just killed that lady right there in that car, y'all. ICE done killed her.
What are you doing here? What did you do?
Footage shows an SUV blocking a residential street in Minneapolis. A crowd of people who appear to be protesting are lining the footpaths. Multiple law enforcement vehicles appear and immigration agents start ordering the woman behind the wheel to get out. One of the ICE agents tugs at the driver's side door handle. Another, near the front of the vehicle, opens fire as the SUV attempts to drive away. 37-year-old woman Renee Nicole Good is killed. In a post on Truth Social, the US President Donald Trump says an ICE officer was viciously run over, though videos of the incident appear to indicate that's not the case. Even so, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem insists the officer opened fire in self-defense.
It was an act of domestic terrorism. What happened was our ICE officers were out in an enforcement action. They got stuck in the snow because of the adverse weather that is in Minneapolis. They were attempting to push out their vehicle and a woman attacked them and those surrounding them and attempted to run them over and ram them with her vehicle.
Mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, has vehemently rejected those accounts from Trump administration officials.
Having seen the video of myself, I want to tell everybody directly, that is bullshit.
So too has Minnesota Governor Tim Walz.
Do you have no decency? We have someone dead in their car for no reason whatsoever. And I don't want to be right about this, but I said if they do this, they're going to create a chaotic situation where someone innocent's going to get killed. And they did it.
Advocacy and Outreach Director for Advocates for Human Rights, Madeline Lohman, is troubled by the stories federal authorities are telling about this death.
The Department of Homeland Security is engaging in some really irresponsible and untruthful rhetoric about their operations. They mischaracterize the immigrants that they detain, and they're certainly mischaracterizing this incident as terrorism.
According to a local council member and the area's congressional representative, Renee Good was one of the legal observers of the ICE raids, who usually operate in a volunteer capacity. Governor Walz says the state of Minnesota will ensure there is a full, fair and expeditious investigation into the shooting.
Rachel Hayter. This month marks a year since Donald Trump returned to the White House for a second term. And as we've just heard, the United States starts 2026 a divided country. Polling there suggests more Americans want to leave than ever before. And one migration expert says rather than work opportunities, American politics is now the main reason his clients want to move to Australia. Jeremy Story Carter filed this report.
I'm an American living in Australia.
Good morning. I'm an American in Australia.
We're Americans who have just moved to Australia, and I can't believe this is my life.
If you were even occasionally on social media over the past year, there's every chance one of these videos has popped up in your feed.
Good morning. It's our 18th day living in Australia, and today I'm...
It's part of a trend of Americans who have recently moved to Australia, posting sunny dispatches of their new lives on TikTok and Instagram. Texan-turned-Brisbane content creator Lex B is one of them.
It is definitely a wave of content that, to me, seems like is ramping up. So it ended up becoming much bigger than I thought it would be.
She arrived with her family a little over a year ago and posts regularly about navigating the quirks of Australian life, nature and culture. There are videos of her trying local snacks.
That's different.
Making a cake for her son from the iconic Women's Weekly Children's Birthday Cake book.
I am so proud of it. Thank you for all your tips.
And even attempting to dance the nut bush. Amid it all is a sense of how her family's new life in Australia is changing in real time.
Our balance in our personal and my husband's work life has been restored significantly since being here. Our focus has shifted a little bit from less focused on perfection and more focused on connection. There is a large percentage of Australians who really focus on that work-life balance that sometimes, oftentimes, is missing in the States.
The trend comes in the shadow of increasing division in the US. A recent Gallup poll found 1 in 5 Americans would leave the country permanently if they could, a figure that rises among young women. David Lesperance is a tax and immigration specialist who has helped high-net-worth Americans relocate internationally for 35 years.
Before Donald Trump came down the golden escalator, 9 out of 10 of my clients were driven by purely financial reasons. Now it's completely reversed. They have an emotional reaction to everything from masked agents sweeping people up on the streets to January 6th, the Epstein files. Now a lot of Americans are thinking like, I still think of myself as that American ideal, but the America I'm living in today is not that ideal.
Whether this bears out in a meaningful rise in immigration is still to be calculated. But David Lesperance says after conservative activist Charlie Kirk's assassination in September, 6 of his clients made the call to proceed with leaving the country.
They just thought the level of political violence here has just increased dramatically. And all of them were donors and 2 of them were Trump donors. And they just said, you know, I'm on a list somewhere. And so somebody who hates Democrats or somebody who hates, you know, Trump supporters hates me. I don't want to be home in the U.S. when they come knocking on the door. So Australia, for a lot of them, is a top consideration.
Ramya Varavan and her family moved from San Francisco's Bay Area to Sydney's affluent northern beaches early last year.
We're Americans who have moved to Sydney, and one of the biggest differences is how our weekends look.
She's taken a posting on Instagram about their new, more laid-back life in Australia.
Trump got elected, and then we moved shortly thereafter. And a lot of people were like, oh yeah, like that makes sense. And I think a lot of people did feel like, what's the point of living in the U.S. when, you know, there's just access to so many better policies in other countries like healthcare for women and LGBTQ rights, all these other things. Like if that affects you on a day-to-day basis, then probably another country makes more sense, right?
Back in Brisbane, Lex B says 90% of her views come from Australians, curious to see what others think about them. She says after more than a year here, she's starting to feel truly at home.
The love that I get from total random people, it proves how warm and community-focused Australians are. And they're so supportive and encouraging of my being here, my family being here, and us exploring things. And it gives me that much more love for Australia.
Brisbane-based American Lex B, that That's a report from Jeremy Story Carter. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And that's where you'll find ABC News Daily each weekday too. The latest episode has more on the ICE officer's shooting of a woman in Minneapolis and the furor that has erupted. PM will be back at the same time tomorrow. I hope you'll join me then. Good night.